Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today we've got a very special guest. It's one of our favourite follows on LinkedIn. He's a freelance cold caller, he's a coach, he's a sales trainer, an owner of probably the smoothest voice in sales. It's Nick Jeans. Nick, how are you?
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I'm very well, thank you for asking. How about the both of you?
I'm very well, Jack.
Nick, that tone. God, you've got those Barry White vibes going on. No wonder you do so well on the phones.
So for anyone who doesn't know you, we always start off the podcast the same way. Who are you and what's the problem that you solve?
Well, I'm Nick Jeans, and I solve problems for people that are looking to actually make headway in sales, whether that's face-to-face, whether it's on the phone. But as you possibly know, I'm a strong proponent of the cold call. So a lot of the people I help problems with are those that need to be able to get out on that phone and make that really good cold call.
Okay. And what do those symptoms typically look like of people who are, is it people who've never done it before, people who've tried and failed? What does the problem and the symptom look like?
I suppose it's a lot of the people that we deal with, or I deal with, are those that are coming into the industry from cold. Pardon the pun. They've obviously just joined as a salesperson. They haven't really got a great deal of experience in terms of the cold call itself. But it can also be people that have got good experience, but maybe they just want to get a little bit further. But I think, as Jack and I were saying just before the actual conversation here, you tend to lose your muscle memory. And some people that are sort of moving on in the industry tend to forget actually how to make that call. And so it's those people who may have lost a little bit of confidence and they just want to regain it and get back into the sort of the swing of things. And of course, since COVID, things have changed quite dramatically. And if they haven't been calling after COVID, I think that these people are those that probably need a little bit of help too.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to jump into it rather than jumping blindly, if you've got somebody that can kind of hold your hand and guide you through and tell you that everything's going to be all right and cold calling isn't going to kill you, it always helps. So, Nick, you're a seasoned professional in the world of cold calling and sales. So take us back. How did you get into sales?
I was 19 or 20 years old. I distinctly remember it. I was a trainee manager for Pickford's, who I think they're still around, but a removals firm. At that point in time, I think I'd been there for 2 months. I'd seen an advertisement for car salesman, and I just got so excited about this position. I applied for it, invited for interview, I think twice, offered the job. And I remember being so incredibly excited at the age of 19 and a half to be offered a job as a car salesman. So I had a chat with my manager who was training me to be the Pickford's trainee manager, and had quite a sort of, I suppose, a difficult conversation to say after 2 months, I'm going to leave, I'm going to go and sell cars. And he did the best thing, which I thought anybody should do, which was he shook my hand and wished me well. And I'll never forget him.
That's the best way to do it. Okay, so let's go back to 19-year-old Nick selling cars. Are there any moments that you look back on now and just think in the way that you were selling, because obviously you've got a vast amount of experience now, and cringe? Or was there any formal training that you look back and think like, oh, why was I told to do that?
I cringe for two reasons. The main reason is because at the dealership that I worked at, we were sent on an American sales course called the Pendle Selling System. There's a book, which if I try to remember, Psycho-Cybernetics, that you may have come across, which is still out there today for salespeople. But it's very much this sort of psychology and sales. And at the tender age that I was, almost impossible to digest and to absorb. But some of the facets of that system worked, but not in the pushy salesman sort of environment that I was actually in at that particular time. So yes, I was given some formal sales training, but it was pretty awful. And the rest of it was just sort of left for me to decide how to go about it. Luckily, after a fairly short period of time, about 18 months, I managed to then find a company that took me on as a cold caller. And that's when, probably at the age of 21, I started cold calling properly. And that was a completely different world.
So what were those first cold calls like then, when you were first doing them? Can you take us back to what that felt like, what your approach was?
Yeah, I worked for a company in Kingston upon Thames, and it was a company that did both B2C and B2B. But I started off as an agency worker doing some B2C stuff, and that was calling people at home, usually between sort of 6 and 8 p.m. They're sort of in the middle of watching Coronation Street or something. You obviously disturb them, and you're talking about perhaps getting them to sign up to another year or 2 years with Time Life magazine. So that was the start of it. In terms of any sort of formal training, none really. But if you spoke to people in a decent, respectful, courteous manner, you got really good feedback, and a lot of the people were quite happy to take the call. As a result of that, quite quickly, I sort of progressed onto the B2B side, which I'd never even heard of. And this, of course, then was calling companies on behalf of companies to typically make it was appointments for sales reps for compact computers, I remember, the London Brick Company being another. But that was a whole different world, and it was a very exciting world because I had always sort of loved business, and this was getting me closer to it.
So it sounds like some of your approach was already in you. You just were maybe a bit of a natural at getting people engaged and having conversations.
I think it was just the respect thing. You sort of spoke to people like they were human beings. It's easy for me to say that now because, of course, that's sort of typically what people are saying you should always do. But I think it was trying to sound sort of professional, but, you know, not so much. Obviously, at that time, when I was 20, 21, there was lots of scam calls going on. Lots of recruitment companies who had terrible reputations, and lots of people were being called in a really sort of like unprofessional, bad manner. And I knew about this, and I thought I would just try to be maybe different to the rest. And we got scripts from the campaigns that we worked on, which was very helpful. But then I tried to adapt it just to sort of my style that would hopefully fit the remit that our clients were looking to achieve. So, yeah, it was perhaps something that was in me, or maybe I got from my parents, I don't know.
And what did your managers think when you started changing that script to be more in line with the way Nick is?
They realised that I was getting results, and it seemed quite clear that if I got the results that they were looking for, that it didn't really matter. I think probably after maybe 2 or 3 months, they would put me sort of, they would have an open mic, if you like, so people could listen into the call where I was speaking to the clients, and they would try to pick up on some of the things that I was doing and some of the things that I was saying, although I didn't really understand what I was doing that was anything different. I just thought it was perhaps the way, you know, that it was me, and that how people would like to be spoken to, especially when it came to the sort of the B2B side of things.
Yeah. Well, let's jump ahead a little bit then. So, you know, you're on LinkedIn a lot, as we are, and there's good advice, like the advice that you give. And then there's advice that leaves me scratching my head and thinking, I don't know how someone's come up with that or what that's based on. So let's take one of those subjects. So let's say objections. So should we be thinking of objections in isolation, like here's the textbook way you deal with an email objection or budget objection? Or is there a way that we can think of objections as a uniformed approach? How do you typically look at them?
I think I did some sort of sales training many, many years ago that's always stuck in my mind with regards to objections, that typically it's a call for information. And the reason I think that is because it seems perhaps you may not have explained it clearly enough to the person that you're speaking to. Whether that's right or wrong, I honestly don't know, but I don't consider that objections should be dealt with in a textbook sort of fashion. It's very much depending on the context of that conversation that's led up to that particular objection at that particular point. But it's always to try and understand why it's been used or said, and then when it has been, as to perhaps the reason behind that, and to sort of backtrack to find out maybe what's happened that individual to give that objection. I think the very word objection is obviously quite a harsh word. It means that somebody is trying to push you away. I object to this. I don't want it. Well, that's not necessarily the case, because quite a lot of people, again, depending on the context, are looking for more information so they can make an informed decision as to perhaps whether they want to, need to, should proceed, or perhaps ask more questions to understand more before moving forward. So objections are, I think they're a grey area. I don't think there's any specific way of handling, dealing, or I suppose heading them off, but to just understand why the individual has come up with them and to try and make it clear on both sides so that you can move forward.
I love that. And I think you are right there that we should probably start a petition and get them to change the word objections in the sales community. And there will be objections at times, but actually something's probably been missed upstream. So on objections, we had Marcus Kalki on the last podcast, who's obviously experienced in the world of sales. And he gave us a great objection. One of the ones we always get messages about is like, how do I handle email objections? So Nick, imagine that I'm going to put you on the spot here, if that's okay. Imagine we've been talking for 5-10 minutes. We get to the end of the call and I say, Nick, you know what? Really, really good to talk to you. It's a lot of food for thought. Why don't you send me an email over and I'll have a look at it.
Jack, that's really nice of you to say that. I appreciate it. Thanks. But it sounds like, and I'll be pointed if you don't mind, is that just a really nice way to get me off the phone?
Beautiful. I love it. The label, the call out, your gut instinct. Brilliant, Nick. We're singing from the same hymn sheet here. Okay. So one of the other topics that gets kind of thrown about a lot on LinkedIn and in the sales community, gatekeepers. Should we be turning up to their office and making them brunch? Should we be treating them like a piece of dirt? No, we don't promote that. But how do we handle gatekeepers, and what is the best way when if all you've got is a list of 500 office numbers and you know that you're going to be speaking to Shirley on reception, but you've got to speak to Mr. Daddy Zach Thompson over there who runs his own company, how am I getting through to Zach?
There's gatekeepers and there's gatekeepers. And I think the thing is that you have to understand, again, the sort of context as to who you're speaking to, who you're trying to get through to, and the company and the size that you're calling. The bigger the company that I found through both recent and past experience, the bigger the company, the bigger the switchboards, the busier they are, the quicker that receptionist wants to get you off and get you onto wherever you need to be so they can take the next call and the next 20 calls that they've got already waiting. And quite often they'll just ask you, you know, who is it? And I'll quite often say it's Nick Jeans, which company, XYZ, and they put you through. You've obviously asked for John Smith, so they know where to put you through. And that tends to happen quite frequently in the large corporates. So you could almost say that they're the easiest ones to sort of bypass the receptionist. However, moving on from that call, you might be put through to the PA of the individual that you're trying to speak to the personal assistant. And I wouldn't actually call those gatekeepers, because quite often, if you get them on the side, they can help you. But you have to sort of understand really their involvement with the prospect that you're speaking to. So I tend to sort of just go straight through, John Smith, please. And who is it? It's Nick Jeans. Thank you. And if they don't put you through, what's the nature of the call? They will quiz you quite often. And you have to be upfront. Because whether you bypass reception or get through another way and you don't have the direct dial number or the mobile number, that PA takes care of all the appointments typically for those high-ranking individuals that you're using or you're speaking to as a prospect. So if you're honest, open with them, but you don't give them too much, so I suppose a nice little taster of what perhaps you do and why you wanted to speak to John Smith, maybe 5 times out of 10 you will win and you will get through. The other 5, unfortunately, you won't. And you just have to sort of, you know, throw the dice, don't you, with that. If you go to a smaller company, your prospect is a smaller sort of holding, maybe a managing director of maybe sort of 50 to 100 people, the receptionist now becomes receptionist and PA. So they look after everything. And they're instructed to never let you through. They don't have a policy of putting people through unless they know who they are and why they're calling. So the lady who speaks to you on the phone that answers it is going to say, who are you? Why are you calling? What's your name? What's the company? What's the business? All these questions. And so with those people, it's quite easy. Again, maybe 5 out of 10, but the easy way to handle them is who's calling when you've asked for John Smith? It's Nick Jeans. Thank you. And which company? XYZ. Thank you. And why are you calling? Can you just put me through, please? Thanks. If you answer 2 questions, maybe 3 at the most, they then start to seem maybe a little bit worried about who you might be because of your tonality. You're sort of fairly assertive. You're not forceful, but assertive. So 5 out of 10 times they put you through. The other 5, they keep asking the questions because they're hard ballers. They know what your job is and what you're trying to do. And they might sort of call you out for it and you might just have to sort of take your chances and run.
Yeah.
And then the sort of, I suppose, the in-betweens, which are the kind of the companies that might sort of have a receptionist stroke PA, or they might have a receptionist that's overwhelmed with, it's really a question of trying to sort of, it's luck of the draw. But if you maybe use your sort of, your bonds a bit and look at the sort of size of the company, even by the name, you know if you're going to get a chance to get through or not. And I think that's typically how I would deal with gatekeepers.
I think a lot of people seem to think there's like a magic way or a magic phrase to get through. I know that we had a client that we were dealing with office numbers and they wanted me to get through to AXA and speak with the CEO. And no matter my experience in working in sales, going through the switchboard and speaking to customer service, do you know what happened, Nick? I didn't get through to the CEO of AXA, surprisingly.
I can't think why at all.
It didn't happen. So a lot of people think there is like a little magic trick. But I would say that if we were a bigger company and we had an office number, listening to you and the way that you speak, I would automatically, if I was the gatekeeper, I'd be like, he sounds the part. Like you because of your tone and your confidence, and this is through years of experience, I think you sound like you could be on the same level. What advice would you give to a 20-something somebody? They're in their first sales job, they've got to speak to the gatekeepers, but they sound like a 20-something somebody who might not have that gorgeous Barry White tone like you, Nick.
That's a very pertinent question on the basis that it absolutely comes with confidence and experience. And the two sort of run hand in hand, and a sort of a 20-something newbie in the industry, it's really tough. Not only because they're young, but also if you go back 20, 30 years ago, there weren't so many B2B cold calls about. There are many at the moment. Well, let's say prior to COVID, there were many. I think now it's kind of dipping down the other way again. People are going like, I'm too scared. I don't want to make a cold call because the gatekeeper's going to sort of bawl me out. But I think it's a question of trying to ignore the fact that you're 20-something. And it's about the confidence. If you believe that you can put together something in a sentence that is confident and assertive and just keep trying, that's going to get you through. Not all the times, but it's going to get you through. I don't know if I've got a Barry White voice, but thank you for saying that. But even when I've called in the past, it hasn't got me through. People have bawled me out and they've said, you know, look, we just don't take sales calls because you're not giving me any information, so I'm going to block you there and you're gone. And it happens, and it is always going to happen. But if you set that mindset first about the fact that if you speak clearly, assertively, and you sound like you're at the same level as the person you want to speak to, you've got a much better chance. And I think that's a really pertinent thing to think about when it comes to coaching or training, is that a lot of the youngsters aren't given that sort of power, because it is a power, assertiveness, tonality, and sort of getting through.
I think the other point you mentioned before as well, Nick, that was so valuable, I think the three of us would probably say we used to do it in our early career, it's that need to kind of overshare in the first part of the conversation, you know, with the gatekeeper, what's it about, before you know it, you've said too much, they think salesperson and the phone's down, you know, that just giving enough.
I think you're absolutely right, and I love the fact that you guys are proponents for how to sort of get past gatekeepers, what not to do, and I think you've said this quite a few times, Jack, is you don't make friends with a gatekeeper, because that's never going to work. I can almost understand that you make perhaps a little bit of a friendship with a PA, and that's a different story. But with a gatekeeper, as soon as you've told them, all of a sudden, they're the CEO, they're the MD, they're making that business decision. And of course, it's going to be no. And I remember going back all the way back when, to those first heady days of when I was in my youth making cold calls, going like, yeah, but we can save him money. We can save your company money. What are you saying? Yeah, well, we're not interested. Thanks very much. Bye. And that will always happen, even today. So give them a taster, maybe, or as little as you need to, just to get the job done, to get through.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move ahead slightly then. So let's say you're like us. So you'll deal with lots of different personality types, probably across lots of different sectors, through both your training side and the cold calling side. So how is it that you're able to question someone in one sector one day wearing one hat for a software company, and then the next day be questioning a totally different industry and a totally different job role? What are the rules on how we're asking people questions when we're qualifying that apply regardless of sector and personality?
I think the first thing to say is that it's a question of switch off one switch, switch on another switch. So before you actually get going for that day's calling, you've set it in your mind who you're calling, what the client is or who the client is, and what the industry you're going to be calling in. Because as you quite rightly state, the day before it could have been something completely different. So it's that mindset, and it's like having a word with yourself for 15 minutes or so before you start to make the calls, to sort of psych yourself up. Okay, so I'm calling the insurance industry today. I'm speaking to CEOs and highfalutin sort of C-suite people. So I need to turn off that. I was talking to, you know, sort of estate agents the day before. Once you've got that mindset, it's then a question of, okay, more assertiveness. It's the tone, the level of the individual you're speaking to, in terms of your sort of perception has gone up. So they're CEOs. They're not kind of like sales managers. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to either of those two roles, but they act and work in completely different ways. So now I'm a CEO or an MD. I'm not somebody that's sort of at a lower stage. So I'll then start to speak these people as if I'm on the same basis of them or as them, talking about their business, which is obviously something that's incredibly important to them. So my questioning will be all about that type of issue, that type of mindset, that type of business sort of thought process that they might be having.
Have you got any favourite questions that you tend to throw in regardless of sect, any real corkers, or do we have to pay for that?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know if I can sort of readily sort of regurgitate any. It very much depends on the context of the conversation. I keep saying that, but it's such an important factor to me. The whole thing, if we just go back a little bit, the whole thing about scripting, I think it's a very, very positive thing to give you some sort of a route map in terms of where you go to and how you get there, and maybe what you should do as a result of something that's said back to you. But when it comes to the questions, it very much depends on who you're talking to, what the perhaps issues might be or have been or could be. And so I will quite often say to people, look, you know, this might sound like a really pointed question, and I really don't want it to sort of to offend you, because certainly that's not my purpose. But you mentioned that you were sort of hemorrhaging a little bit of money on a sort of fairly regular basis. Do you mind if I ask you sort of the size of that pot that perhaps slipping, you know, through the floorboards at the moment for you? And I would ask questions that they would perhaps think, okay, well, this guy's not afraid to ask this question. This guy's kind of like understands where I'm sort of coming from. He's not sort of, you know, just wiping the surface. He's sort of getting right underneath the sort of the gubbings of it. So I think it's be bold with your questioning, be respectful, be professionally respectful at all times, but be bold and ask that question, but put the caveat or the preemptor there first. I really don't want this to sound like I'm being disrespectful. It's certainly not. But for me to get an understanding, you mentioned something before. What exactly did you mean by that? And why didn't you actually sort of show them the door? Why have you kept them on if they're not doing what you're paying them to do?
That preempt is probably one of the most powerful tools you can have. Even the double use of it. So the I think we might have stole it from Marcus actually, but how do I ask you a question that's going to really offend you without you punching me in the face? And so, go on, what is it? And you say, are you sure? I think you're really going to hate me. And they really, really, no, go on, you can say it. And to that point, you could say any challenging question. If you go in without that, it's like a sledgehammer and, whoa, why are you saying that to me? You're a total stranger. So, what about if the roles were reversed then? So what about if you, often you speak to people who probably don't let you get through that series of questions without interrupting you and saying, actually, Nick, tell me about you. What do you do? How does it work? Just get to the point. When they start throwing those questions back to you, are you dealing with them there and then? Have you got a tactic to kind of keep the conversation moving regardless? What do you think?
I pick up, I'm not sure about what you guys think, I'm sure you think the same, but I pick up from the tonality of the conversation right from the get-go. So I want to speak to John Smith, he's the prospect. John Smith picks up the phone. Right from that answer, I've got an understanding as to perhaps the kind of mood he might be in from the way he answers. Certainly, if not when he answers, after I've sort of given my quick intro, and he, sorry, this is Ginger. and he has then answered back, I will get an understanding as to the sort of the level of attention I might have or not. So if perhaps at some point through that conversation I sense that he's sort of getting a little bit fidgety, a little bit sort of, you know, look, what's going on, mate, what are you doing, get to the point, what are you selling, why are you calling me, I would just say, look, I'm not sure if I may have caught you at a bad time. Is that the case? Is this a really bad time? You're being polite by sort of taking my call. Go on from that point. If he says, well, actually, it is a bad time. Okay, let's call another time. Let's set it up so it's good for you. If he says, no, that's fine. He's just maybe sort of in a bit of a mood, or that's his sort of way of being. Look, I appreciate you want me to get straight to the point, but as I mentioned, I wanted a sort of certain amount of time just to ascertain if this is something perhaps that might be of interest, because I don't want to waste your time. So if you can just afford me a little bit more, what I'd like to do is to try to understand exactly what it is that you do that I might be able to speak to you about that might be helpful. If not, that's absolutely fine. But to answer your question, let me have a little bit more time and then let's go from there. What do you think? I wouldn't say it's trying to disarm an argument, isn't it? When you've got somebody in the pub that's sort of shouting at you, oi, mate, what are you doing? Are you looking at my missus? Well, you know, actually, I was looking at your shirt. It's a pretty cool shirt. Anything to sort of like diffuse that situation. And do you mind if I kind of ask you, where did you get that shirt from? It's pretty cool, that, actually. Oh, well, I got... If you get them talking again, if you disarm them and move on, I think that's a really positive thing. But that takes a bit of courage, and it takes the ability for you to sort of stop them in their tracks and to sort of and come back at them.
That is a
I hope that's
yeah,
makes sense.
And that is a beautiful analogy, Nick. Me and Zach, we've got this sixth sense where I know what he's thinking, so I can speak on behalf of him. But I love that with the shirt and the pub, and I think you are right. I might have to use that at some future sales training if you don't mind. I'll credit you. I'll put your photo on a PowerPoint. One of the reasons people are
I'm sure I've got it from somebody else.
One of the reasons people are sometimes funny from the off is their knee-jerk reaction towards salespeople. So when you typically ask someone what they think of salespeople, they'll say scumbag, slimy. What are some of the common misconceptions of salespeople and why?
Well, I think the first one that comes to mind would be they're liars. So they like to tell untruths. They're not open, they're not honest, so they must be liars by default. They manipulate. I'm not sure about scamming. I think that's not a word that they would typically use about salespeople. But I always used to say to people, if they're saying, oh, you're a salesman, are you? You're a cold caller. What are you trying to sell me? And I'd say, you're pretty lucky, because I used to be a car salesman. Now, how do you figure that one? Luckily, I'm not doing that anymore, you know? So I think a lot of people consider salespeople as used car salespeople. You know, Arthur Daly's, if you guys remember that name, Marcus surely would. But just sort of slimy people who are trying to sort of trip you up. And I think the great thing that is now being bounded about, certainly on LinkedIn through certain channels, is the fact that it's all about honesty and transparency and professionalism. Because salespeople have long been considered that as a standard. It's always been something of a negative basis. And who blames them? I think a lot of salespeople as scammers are sort of like negative, because they're just awful. But that then is another subject. It goes down to the training and the coaching, doesn't it, I suppose?
And for those salespeople that might be listening to the podcast, or they might be kind of on LinkedIn scrolling, but they're not self-aware to realise that they fit into that bracket, what could they do to hold the mirror up and work out if they are leading with the best foot forward and being transparent and honest?
I think it's all about really what their clients, their prospects, their customers say about them. And one of the great things, I think, is certainly somebody in their early career is actually asked the people that they're speaking to, after the call, you know, look, thanks very much for your time, but can I just ask you a very sort of searching question? Can I ask what your sort of thoughts are about me and the way that I've sort of come across to you today? How would you sort of describe them? And I think that's a really helpful thing, because on LinkedIn especially, we've got salespeople telling salespeople how to be salespeople, but we don't hardly see buyers telling salespeople how to be salespeople. And I think, if they do, they're usually the buyers are salespeople, aren't they? So it's this kind of lovely circle that it just keeps going around it. But if you ask your prospect, you know, tell me what you thought about that call. Could you give me some feedback? Because that would be really helpful, because I'm fairly sort of new to this as a career. I think that would be a really helpful thing to those individuals at that stage. Of course, listening back to their calls, if they're recorded, I think that's always incredibly helpful. If you ever listen to yourself in a video or in a sort of recording, you sound awful, you hate yourself. But it's that kind of, the more you do it, the more sort of able to sort of accept it you become and are. And therefore, you can only then see, hear, listen to the things that are going to help you moving forward.
Couldn't agree more. I think you've just hit the nail on the head about salespeople telling salespeople and then getting praise and validation or rejection from other salespeople. Really, the whole ethos of, you know, why we all get on and like each other's stuff on LinkedIn is it's all very buyer focused in a world that's become very seller focused. Even CRMs are built around what happens to the seller rather than lambs to the buyer. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's push on then. So I suppose another thing is around sales leadership. So often, I think there's something around salespeople typically last in a role from 12 to 18 months. It's something around there that they last before they move on to another role. And that's often because they're perhaps, they've been overpromised a role, they're working for a leader that's not motivating them in the right way, or maybe they're being KPI'd against the wrong things, which again are having a knock-on effect with that motivation piece. Why do you think that is? Why are so many sales leaders getting it wrong, and why are people leaving jobs so soon after starting?
Okay, well, I think first of all, it's that term sales leader. A lot of the sales supposed leaders aren't leaders. They're just salespeople who think that they can just sit down a group of people on the phones or whichever sort of method they use. Emails apparently seems to be the in thing nowadays. I don't know if you've heard. But they just get them on the phones or on the emails and they just say, just do this, just do that. They're not leaders. If I go back to the first job that I got, which was the cold calling in Kingston upon Thames, I remember being in London. I trawled through hundreds of adverts, sales jobs, and I went for loads of interviews. And I had to be sold at the interview to get me, with no experience really at that point, to sort of like or perhaps go for that job, because they were so bad that they would have to try and sort of manipulate potential sort of candidates into that role. Because that's how it was at that point, and I think it still is to a degree nowadays. People are manipulated into sales roles. They get there and they kind of think, what the hell have I done? You know, this is not what I thought it would be. This is not what I was told, as you mentioned earlier, Zach, what it was going to be. I've been oversold, overpromised, underdelivered, and undersold and everything. So I think it's really understanding that some people, firstly, do choose to go into sales. And if they have chosen to go into sales, they're probably the people at that particular point that are going to leave very quickly after they've seen the sort of shambles that they go into. So a sales leader to me is somebody that is going to help to uncover the ability of these individuals by showing them that they've been in that battle themselves. They've got their hands dirty, they're battle hardened, and some of the things they've done have actually worked. So they will help those individuals get on that first rung of selling. But those sales leaders have also looked at the ability of getting themselves up further in terms of self-progression by more knowledge, by more research, by reading books, by more psychology, by understanding their market, their buyers more and more, to help the people that they employ to do a similar sort of a job. Obviously, everybody in sales has a different persona, a different sort of psychology, and a different way of going about things. We're not all robots or automatons. And I think it's the ability of those sales, those true leaders, to bring out the best of those people. And if they sit down and understand the psychology of those individuals, then they can start to sort of speak to them at the same level, not as I'm the boss, you do as I tell you, but to coach all of that information out of them, to coach, if you like, the inner self or the inner those people that they didn't even know that they were or they had or they could be. And it's really just being able to get out of people what they didn't know they had to the best of their own ability.
So I think we'd all agree with that. And I imagine people that are listening to this would think that it wasn't, what you just said wasn't aspirational. I think it was quite realistic to expect that. So why is that not happening?
I honestly don't know why. I mean, it's for me, for you guys as well, and for lots of other people that we know that we kind of, I suppose we engage and interact with on a fairly frequent basis. It's a simple thing, isn't it? It's kind of like, why doesn't everybody do the same thing? But they don't. And I think it comes from maybe the bottom or the top or anywhere in between. You might have a guy that, somebody that sets up a company and they go like, we need to just get this product or this service out the door. So I'll get somebody in that can crack that whip, get 20 people, thumbs on seats, on the phone, on the email, whichever way, and get them to sort of try and open doors for us to sell our products. They don't give them any encouragement. They don't give them hardly any training. But what they do is give them a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, and they give them an unattainable quota, and they say, you're lucky to be in this job, you've got 3 months, otherwise you're out, and that's it. And that still happens today. Why on earth it does, I don't know. And one of the things about, and I'm going to sort of brush you up a little bit here, boys, because one of the great things you do is that you are really happy to take in people that have had no experience. And you'll take them from zero sales experience up to the point where the people that you've got on your team, I would imagine, are better than a vast proportion of the salespeople out there at the moment, even those that have been in there and doing that job for several years. And I mean that sincerely, because it's all about what you're able to encourage from these people that they have seen in themselves. They've taken the brave step thinking, I'd like to do that. I really want to do that. And they're doing it because of the way that you treat them. Everybody should be treated as humans, not as sort of just as a number. But unfortunately, in the sales game, it's always going to be the case. And we still see it, don't we? Every day on LinkedIn.
That's firstly, Nick, that's very kind of you. That's some very kind words there. And the team are an incredible group of people that want to get better and strive to get better. And they put in a lot of the work that obviously me and Zach are on hand and the other team that have been there longer to help them. But they do put a lot of work in themselves to get better. And it is a shame that the industry is like that. But I'm going to flip it now. And I'm going to say, I'm going to give you one of the guys that's come in. They've interviewed with us. They've passed mine and Zach's Hercules challenge to get the job. And I'm going to send them to you. They're a blank canvas, straight out of university. Don't know anything about sales. Never read a book. Haven't watched a Grant Cardone YouTube video. And you're going to teach them how to sell. Where do you start, Nick?
Well, I think you start right from the very beginning, don't you? And I would say to these people, what do you imagine this role to be? What do you imagine the sort of things that you want to do? How would they look like? And where do you see yourself being in terms of what you want to do? Where do you feel that you would have a mindset or an attitude or a personality that might lend itself to having a conversation with somebody and then perhaps selling them something that's worth a great deal of money? So I'd try to understand from the very get-go what these people are thinking about, why they're there, and what at the end of that sort of, I suppose, that short sort of, how can I say, we all, don't we? We look forward to the future to sort of understand what's at the end of that sort of line where we can physically touch it, I suppose, an achievable goal. And for somebody coming in that's never been in the industry before, they all have in their minds a goal that they would like to achieve. So actually what I'm looking to do is to sort of get myself my first place. I'd like to find a house somewhere I could live. I could be independent. I'm only young. I want to be independent. So I'd try to understand what they feel that they're going to do to allow them to get there. And that will give me some indication as to, I suppose, their attitude, but also their foresight, their strength to be able to get through sort of tough times. Once I've understood, and it's kind of trying to get all this thought process into some sort of funnel that doesn't come out going blah, 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 because there's a lot of things, isn't there, to sort of understand about people. It's not about how to sell, it's how to be able to interact and to engage with people. And if these people are maybe thinkers, if they're... Yeah, I'm tying myself up in knots here because I've got so much information in my head about it that I don't think I'm making any sense, I'm afraid, guys. Let's sit down, let's talk, let's understand really what it is that you're looking to achieve and why. What's made you come here? What's made you think about this as something that you'd want to do? Why do you feel that you're likely to sort of find this an enjoyable career? Why do you think that it's going to be something that you would like to do where you're probably going to get a lot of rejection that makes you feel happy to come in the next day and face the same again to sort of get through? And by understanding maybe some of the things that they've gone through in their life, their history, maybe some of the difficult things they've already had to face, or some of the challenges that they're going through now, that gives you an understanding, I think, as perhaps how that person is built. And then from that point, it's like, okay, well, this is where we start and this is what we do. But if we do this, how do you think you're going to feel about that? And where do you feel that you could sort of make progress without anybody else assisting you at that particular time?
Great point. I mean, the thing that you were, I think we talk about it as like an internal script, but it's almost like, what do you fall back on when times are tough? So what are those internal values? And we definitely didn't find that out when we first started off with people. And since doing that as part of the interview process, it's been really helpful because it kind of manages everyone's expectations up front. And I think one of the bad habits that we had that you had alluded to before when we were asking about sales leadership is being a bit frightened to tell people about what the reality is going to be. But it doesn't really make any sense because as salespeople, we're all about aligning expectations and making them realistic. So well, I think they've been great insights. I've loved this conversation, Nick. I wish we could talk for longer. If people are listening to this and they think, I want that guy on the phone for me, or I want that guy to train my people on how to be as smooth as he is, where can they start that process?
So LinkedIn, obviously, is probably the most prominent place where I am residing at the moment in time. So Nick Jeans at LinkedIn. I'm happy to speak to anybody. And we could have a chat.
Perfect. Right. Thank you so much, Nick. We'll make sure we put all the relevant links in the description. But yeah, I've really enjoyed talking
thank
and
you,
hope
Nick.
We can
great
do this
chat.
Again.
Gentlemen, thank you. Very kind of you.